Welcome to the Pen to Profit Podcast. We cover everything from writing captivating prose to grammar to marketing tips, tricks, and insider advice to turn your passion for writing into cold, hard cash. Get ready to skyrocket your book sales and your audience with our guidance. Buckle up because you're going on a rollicking ride through the realm of writing riches because the Pen to Profit Podcast starts now.
All right, and we are live. Welcome back once again, all you Hemingway hopefuls and aspiring Austins, to another episode of the Pen to Profit Podcast. I am Ray Evans, your host and friendly neighborhood proofreader and copy editor. And in my quest to bring you guys the most value, I've been getting a lot of positive feedback from everyone that you guys really like the interview episodes, especially when I have fellow writers on, because it's like Tony Robbins once said, you know, success leaves clues. And so I want to take a moment to introduce our guest today. Tom Fowler is a USA Today best-selling mystery and thriller writer. He was born and raised in Baltimore. Even though he now lives in the DC suburbs of Maryland, he still considers Baltimore his home. His full-time job is in the field of computer security. Even from a young age, Tom wanted to write. He was about 7 or 8, so the stories were brief and awful. Among them was a murder mystery in which no one died. And in fact, everyone recovered quite nicely in the hospital. In the intervening years, Tom has gotten over this problem with killing characters in his stories. Tom's first series of books focuses on unconventional private investigator C.T. Ferguson. His other series stars former special ops soldier John Tyler, who can never quite settle into a career as a classic car mechanic. Tom Fowler writes stories involving flawed heroes, action, and plenty of snark. He's also a proud indie author who learned from a lot of smart people and is happy to pay it forward. So Tom, do you want to say hello to the audience? And can you also tell us what your number one favorite book is and why?
God, oh, wow. Well, hello, everyone. Happy to be here. Thanks, Ray, for having me. Oh, God, my favorite book probably changes week to week. I will go with a classic and say The Great Gatsby.
Oh, nice, nice. I'm glad you didn't say one of your books, because that would have been very pretentious and very vain of you.
A little bit, yeah.
All right, so I wanted to jump right into it with the hard-hitting questions. So I wanted to ask you, could you tell me and the audience, how did you initially get started as a writer, and what was it that inspired you to specifically write in the mystery and thriller genres?
Well, like in the bio, I started doing it when I was a kid. I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house. For reference, I just turned 50 recently. So they would watch shows like The Rockford Files and things like that were on in the 70s. Maybe Columbo and other shows like that. So being a kid who was exposed to these shows, I decided I would try to write something like that myself. And that was the murder mystery in which, you know, no one actually died. And in fact, I identified the killer like in the first paragraph. Well, not killer. I can't call him a killer. Nobody died. The stabber, because he stabs people in the first paragraph. So not a mystery either. 0-for-2 on the murder mystery count. Over the years, I read a bunch of other different genres. I tried my hand at writing fantasy probably in my 20s. I don't think I did it very well. But, you know, maybe 15 years ago, I started reading a lot more in the mystery and thriller space, and I got the writing bug again. And, you know, I dabbled over the years in various things, but I really sat down to try to write a mystery series. And I probably started in earnest in 2010, let's say, because it took about 7 years for my first book to get ready for prime time.
Wow, awesome. That's interesting. So it's kind of like you said, like in your formative years with your grandparents watching like those shows like Columbo and those mystery shows kind of like influenced you. I remember when I was a kid, I used to watch a lot of Looney Tunes. Specifically, I remember the ones with like Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he like run off the cliff and he would keep running until he looked down and then he realized. Yeah, I tried to reenact that like off of my bed multiple times. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it doesn't work. Like cartoon physics are not like real world physics. Maybe I should have stuck to actual writing stories as opposed to like injuring myself. So according to your bio, it says that you work in computer security. So I don't consider myself a very technical person. You know, we're having this interview on Zoom right now. I don't understand how any of this works. All I know is I flip the switch on the computer and the somehow the electricity comes out of the wall, and I'm able to have this conversation with you. So could you tell me and the audience a little bit, when you say computer security, like, what does that exactly entail?
It's a very big term, and it's constantly evolving as new technologies, new threats emerge. You know, I started out as a hardware technician many years ago, you know, repairing computers, building computers. I then eventually moved into a security role probably 15-ish years ago. Right now, I do a lot with IT risk management and vulnerability management, keeping systems secure. The latest, I can't call it a buzzword because it really is a thing, is zero trust, which is where you assume pretty much that bad actors are in your network and you take appropriate measures to protect it.
I see. So kind of like when people get like those phishing emails from that Nigerian prince that says he'll give you $1.5 million, but first you just need to send him like $500. That's right. The kind of stuff you try to like prevent those type of things from happening.
Yes.
Got it. Interesting. So so pretty much, you know, we know that you write in the mystery and the thriller genre and kind of have a better sense and idea of what computer security is now. So I guess, is there any sort of like a, how does the saying go? Would you say that in your writing versus what you do in your, does art like imitate life? Would you say that you incorporate any elements of like, you know, your, what you do for work into your stories in any way? And if so, how?
In a roundabout way, yeah. My mystery series focuses on a character named C.T. Ferguson, who is a private investigator, but he is not former law enforcement, like most fictional private, and like most real private investigators too. He comes from a background of being a hacker, and he thought he could solve cases from his keyboard, and every book proves that wrong. But there are certain things in the books, yes, that that come from, not directly from things I've done, but principles that I've used in my job, or that I've seen things happen. Those things happen in the books, because he does use some cyber dark arts, if you will, to get some information and to solve his cases.
Oh, awesome. Because I remember like Shakespeare, for example, like when he was writing Macbeth, the current monarch in England, I think it was James I at the time, he was a very superstitious type of guy. So when Shakespeare was writing a play for him to be performed, he specifically put in like the supernatural elements with like, you know, the witches. So it's kind of like, how would I say, like you're kind of like writing, how is it, in the, you're adding elements from, I guess, from like your contemporary life into in the art. I was just kind of curious if you were doing anything similar. And that's pretty cool. I might have to actually pick up one of those books. I'm going to make a note of that.
They say write what you know. And I think that's very limiting advice, because otherwise fantasy wouldn't exist. You know, nobody's ever met an elf or a dragon or anything like that. My genre, right. Even in the genre I write in, like the 800-pound gorilla is Jack Reacher, who is an American MP written by an Englishman. Who has never been in the American military. So write what you know only goes so far. But yeah, I do know something about computer security, so I have incorporated some of that into my books.
Awesome. So prior to our interview, I was snooping on your website, and it looks like the majority or almost all of your books are published by, I might be butchering this, Widening Gyre or Gyre Media. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah, that's my company, yeah.
Oh, it's your company?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, okay. So then it would be that your books are self-published. It isn't like a... Yes. Oh, okay. Well,
interesting development. Recently, I agreed to a contract with an independent publisher in the UK to take over publication of the C.T. Ferguson series.
Congratulations.
I will keep doing the thrillers under my, I mean, Widening Gyre Media is just like a little publishing imprint. I have a limited liability company in LLC. So I just publish it under that. If you don't need one to be an author, you don't even need one to be a successful author. I just did it for the, you know, financial and tax benefits.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, because I thought that was like a totally separate company. I was actually Googling them. I really couldn't find anything about them. I said, oh, this must be like a really small company. And
it is. One employee, in fact.
That's interesting. So now I got a question. You mentioned in passing that there are like some tax benefits. Like, could you elaborate on that a little bit? That what made you decide
not
to
really? No. Incorporate that? That is something some of that stuff is going to vary state to state. And certainly country to country. Listeners outside the U.S. may not, in England, it's called a limited company. It's kind of the same thing. But state to state, some of the benefits are going to change. So the best person to talk to would be an accountant who works in your state to tell you about the benefits and maybe even some of the drawbacks of setting up an LLC. Most authors probably don't need to do it. I'm not sure I needed to do it, but I did it because I thought it was a good move at the time.
Gotcha. Oh, that was interesting. That went a totally different direction.
Yeah.
All right, awesome. So, So in my snooping in preparation for this interview, I was on your Amazon profile and I was looking through the books that you have on your profile there. And it looks like the earliest book of yours I could see was published approximately, I think it said September 24th, 2018. And so I was curious, how many books in total have you written and published up to today in February 2024?
If we count the one that'll be released in March of 2024, that will make 22.
22 books.
Yes. And the first one was The Reluctant Detective. It's the first CT mystery that came out in the fall of 2017. And like I mentioned before, that took me about 7 years to get it ready. Obviously, I've increased my pace since then. But, and for most people, I think the first book is going to take a long time because you have to figure so many things out. Like, how do you write a book? How do you edit a book? Do you need help editing a book? Usually the answer is yes. And one of the things that helped me get serious about it really was hiring an outside editor to tell me where I was going wrong. Because at some point we are blind to our own mistakes. You can only look at the same document, so many times you're just going to gloss over mistakes that you're making or things you should fix. So I really started getting serious about it probably in 2016 and published it in the fall of 2017.
Yeah, and just to bounce off what you just said about editing, even though that's what I do for a living, I don't mean this as a shameless plug to get more clients. Even though I would like clients, if you do, you can go in the show notes and you can request a sample edit from me to see if we're a good fit. But yeah, I totally agree with that because when you're writing your own art, you need like that third party to look at it subjectively. Mm-hmm. And because as a writer, you've been working on that manuscript for weeks, even months sometimes. So there might be little issues that you might not see that a third party could see. And it definitely is better to have like a professional editor and subsequently a proofreader as well, as opposed to just doing it all yourself or just saying, oh, the beta readers cannot do that. That's really not ultimately what beta reading is not, it's not about catching those right. grammatical issues. And so now you had also, I did want to mention something that you had just said a moment ago. So 22 books under your belt in about roughly 6 years, approximately. So sounds like you probably have a wealth of experience. So I want to ask you, let's say what in your experience, what would you say are like maybe one or two of the most common mistakes that new authors make and what can they do to avoid them? Or to say it differently, when you were starting out, what were some of the mistakes that you initially made that you wish you would have known beforehand, you wish somebody would have told you?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to be you have to find the process that works for you. When I started out, like a lot of people, I didn't use an outline. Like, I am an artiste, the words will just come to me. And, some people are discovery writers, pantsers, as we sometimes call them, people who write by the seat of their pants. And that works for some people. And if it works for you, don't stop doing it just because I said so on a podcast one day. But a lot of it is finding your process. And I think I came to learn that didn't work for me. It was in the third book, my third mystery novel. I kind of wrote myself into a corner, I guess you could say. And I wasn't sure. I knew how I wanted the book to end. And I was probably at about 70, 75%. And I wasn't sure how to bridge the gap there. So I followed the advice that has been popularly attributed to Raymond Chandler. And that is, if you're ever unsure of what to do, have a man walk in with a gun. Works very well if you're writing mysteries and thrillers, less so probably in other genres. And I did. I had a man walk in with a gun. And I think the real key there is to challenge your protagonist to get out of whatever the current situation is and move on. And I was able to do that and finish the book. But I realized I couldn't keep doing this. I can't just have a guy walk in with a gun at 75% of every book. It's going to be ridiculous at some point. So I started using an outline. And my outlining process has probably evolved a little bit over time, but it's what works for me. And you have to find what works for you. And really, the only way to do that is trial and error, and probably in equal measures, trial and error. You're going to find things that don't work, and you cross them off the list, and you replace it with something else. And once you do that, you will find, I think, that you pick up a lot of speed as a writer. Like I mentioned, it took, you know, 7 years or so for that book to get ready. I know I had a finished draft late in 2010 because I showed it to my Christmas party date, who would later become my wife. So I know sometime like December 2010 timeframe, I had a finished draft of it done. But it's, you know, October or so of 2017 until it was published. Obviously, I've sped that up a lot over the years. And now I can crank out a first draft or so in 6 weeks-ish, 6-7 weeks. And working with an editor, which I think is another thing people should do when their book is ready, has really helped. There are still mistakes that I make that he has beaten me up for since day one. It's just like I'm never gonna get that right. But I think a lot of what he has taught me over the years has really made my first drafts much tighter. Like I think I write much cleaner copy now. And I probably need less editing. He still charges me the same rate, but I probably need less editing now than I did in 2017. So yeah, find a process that works for you. You know, certainly talk to other writers about what works for them. Feel free to, you know, borrow and steal. It all ends up being part of your process. And absolutely, it helps to get professional eyes on your product, your book at some point.
Although, that was a lot of value there. And there's a couple of things that I kind of wanted to circle back to. So going back to your editor, I was curious, how did you, are you still working? Have you been working with the same editor for all of your books?
Yes.
Oh, wow. So, okay. So I think most authors tend to stick with, you know, one editor for generally speaking. So I was curious, could you tell me, walk me and the audience through the process of how you initially found your editor that you're working with?
I found him credited in the back of a book that I liked. And I don't remember the name of the book anymore. I probably read it in like 2016 or something like that. But the author, you know, credited like her cover designer, her editor, people like that she worked with. And I was like, okay, this was a good book. It seemed like it was edited well. I'll reach out to this person. And I reached out to a couple other editors as well. Like I got, if you're in author Facebook groups, which are much bigger now than they were in 2016. You can certainly get recommendations from people about editors they've worked with. You mentioned earlier about a sample edit. I think that's very important because not every editor is going to be for everyone. Stylistically, a person may not be the right fit for you, and that's fine. You move on to someone who is. I like this guy from the beginning because he was a fan of the genre, and I think that helps to have an editor who likes your genre and works with authors in your genre. And you know, he was knowledgeable about some things, and he was also, you know, bold enough, if you will, in a sample edit to call me out on the things I did badly and to tell me I was doing them badly and not try to, you know, blow smoke and say, oh, this is so good, if only you made this one little change. No, he basically said, this, what you've done, this doesn't work, and you should, this is a better alternative.
Tom, why do you have five guys with guns coming in every chapter?
right But yeah, like that sample edit was good, and you know, I've been working with the same editor, thankfully, ever since.
Ooh, so again, like three really good points that I wanted to mention that were kind of mentioned there in passing. The importance of, you know, fit when you're working with an editor. Definitely, if you're looking for an editor proofreader, ask for a sample. That almost any editor worth his salt would be willing to do that for you. And like you said, get recommendations from your peers, like in Facebook groups or like Reddit or any Discord, any sort of communities that you might be involved in as well, because more than likely someone else would have worked with them. So, you know, definitely, especially in this business, you know, those relationships are very important as well.
Yeah.
And I was just making a note of that too. And in the back of a book, I don't think I've ever been credited in a book. I got to start getting my clients say, hey, put thank you, Ray Evans. I love you. I'm going to name my firstborn child after you in the back of my book. I did not know that was good advertising right there. And also another good point you mentioned is that editing, it's also, you mentioned that it's actually kind of like teaching you in a sense as well, so that you don't repeat like the same like mistakes that you've been making. So in a sense, it makes you like a better writer over time. Yeah, it's not like he's just catching the fish for you. He's teaching you like how to fish, as the old, to kind of like paraphrase that old adage as it goes.
Yes, absolutely.
So I wanted to ask, do you use like ARC readers as advanced reader copies for any of your books?
I do. I have an ARC team that I've built out of my mailing list. They just recently got yesterday, I think. I just sent out the advanced copy for Backfire, which is my seventh thriller that comes out next month. So yeah, they tend to get the book. I try to send it out about a month ahead of the release date. That way they have about 3 weeks or so, because I try to have a version finalized about a week ahead of time, because, you know, when you just, I distribute, I'm not published exclusively on Amazon. I distribute to all the stores, including through Draft to Digital. And they like to have a finalized version about a week ahead of time, so they can make sure it is lined up and ready to go on release day on all the platforms.
You had mentioned something that it's kind of like a running theme in my author interview. You mentioned that you have a newsletter. So a couple of questions about that. About how many years have you been doing your newsletter, and like, give or take, about how many people do you think you have on it, subscribers in total?
I started it pretty much right away. So I guess fall of 2017. So 6.5-ish years now. Right now, I probably have a little over 6,000 people on my mailing list. Two or three times a year, I try to re-engage people who haven't engaged in a while, and inevitably a bunch of them leave. So I think I just shed about 200 or 300 subscribers, and it happens, you know. You're going to have attrition. You know, that's why you always want to try to find more.
Exactly. And so when, for your mailing list, do you have how do they call them, like a lead or a reader magnet to entice people to sign up? And what do you use to entice people to sign up for your list initially?
I do. I have one for each series. Initially, I used a novella that was set after my first book, which is probably not the best choice, because you can read them in any order, theoretically, but people probably want to read the novel first before they read this novella that's technically set afterwards. So I went back and wrote something kind of a prequel to the series. I did the same thing when I started my thriller series. So each one has a prequel set shortly before the events of the first book. And you know, they're novellas. They're 20, 22,000 words, something like that. But you can have a short story. A short story is fine. You could use sample chapters. I think you're probably going to find less engagement with sample chapters, but you could use that. Deleted scenes. Romance writers have had good luck. Romance writers I've spoken to have good luck with extended epilogues, which is, you know, the events after the book, which is usually like the wedding and, you know, a bonus spicy scene, if it's a spicy book. So, you know, they'll get subscribers that way. But yeah, I use MailerLite for my mailing list, and, you know, a little over 6,000, I think, is about what I currently have. And in every book, in the front of every book, there's a little tiny picture of the book cover and a sign up. You know, go here to sign up for the origin story, if you will, for either C.T. Ferguson or John Tyler, depending on which book it is.
Awesome. Yeah, because I think especially, you know, in 2024 and beyond, it's very important for an author to kind of like, how to say, like, own their audience. So they're not just completely beholden to the ever-changing algorithms on like Facebook and Instagram or Twitter. Right. It's funny, I call it Twitter. It's not even Twitter anymore because the ownership changed. So, and as just users, you don't have any control over that. But with I'm sorry,
The saying is, you can't build a house on someone else's land, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying you shouldn't do social media. Absolutely, have Facebook, Instagram, whatever you want to use. But that, I think that can't be your only form of engagement, because you don't own anything there unless you're Mark Zuckerberg, and then you probably don't need a mailing list. So you own that list. You know, if if I'm not happy with mail or light, I can export that list and take it to ConvertKit or whoever. It's my asset. I can do what I want with it. Well, within legal boundaries, yes. Yeah. But I could take it to another provider, is what I mean. You know, if I'm unhappy with my current one, I can move it somewhere else.
Got it. Exactly. I also like how you mentioned for the magnet to initially entice people, like you had mentioned novellas, short stories, the extended epilogue, but kind of to echo what you said before with the writing process, how, you know, you should try pantsing or doing an outline similar to that, like with the, that reader magnet, again, experiment, you know, and try like a short story for a couple of months, and the data is very important. See how many people are signing up, and then try something else. And then try, like I said, the extended epilogue and see if that performs better, entices more people to sign up. So I'm really seeing a theme in what we've talked about so far, is just kind of that constant experimentation and kind of like having that student's mindset and trying different things to see, you know, which is like the most like efficacious or effective for you.
Yeah. And what you can do is you can have the reader magnet, which is for, let's use the term cold audience, people who don't know, who aren't aware of you. And that can be on your website. That can be in the front of your book. You can join promotions on sites like BookFunnel and Story Origin, which a lot of indie authors use. And then you can have a link in the back of your book to people who have already read it, to something like a bonus epilogue or deleted scenes from the book. You know, in this case, people do know who you are. This is the warm audience. So you're more likely to get in. Sometimes people call the cold audience thing a reader magnet and the warm audience a book magnet. You know, use whatever terms you want, I guess. But it is a different audience because people have already read your book. And if they've enjoyed it, they might be interested in the deleted scenes or the bonus epilogue or whatever. And, you know, there you have another subscriber.
Whew, that was, I hope you were taking notes while you, because we just dropped about 10 consecutive value bombs there back to back. So kind of wanted to circle back a little bit to writing process. So you had mentioned earlier in our discussion, you have about 22 books right now to your credit. So I would say I consider you a pretty prolific author. So
thanks.
I guess to any authors who are listening right now who are, suffering from writer's block or struggling to finish a story, what advice would you give to them?
I'm one of those people who doesn't think writer's block is a thing, is the challenge. You know, when you go to the hospital, the doctor doesn't say, I can't perform this today, I have surgeon's block. You know, it doesn't happen. I think a lot of it, if you are stuck, whether it's, call it writer's block or whatever you want, if you are stuck in your story, you have to like walk away from it for a little bit, look at it from a different perspective, from a different character's perspective. Even if it's like a first person narrative, look at it from the perspective of the villain or the supporting character or the love interest or whoever. Have a man walk in with a gun if that's appropriate to your story, or, you know, challenge the protagonist in some way to move the story forward. I think that it's important to do things like that to kind of shake up the process and shake up the story a little bit. And just try different things. You know, if you don't like it, delete it. But maybe there's a little nugget in there you can use for your second attempt.
I see. But so pretty much you would suggest that the author struggling from quote unquote writer's block continue to write, not they don't like stop, right? That you think that they should.
If you want to take a pause for a couple of days and walk away from, you know, or however long, and come back to it with fresh eyes and a fresh perspective, yeah, absolutely. That can certainly be a benefit. In any kind of project you're stuck on, not just a writing project, but I tend to try to power through things like that. That's just me. But again, people need to do what works for them.
Right. Yeah. So again, going back to like our running theme, you know, you could try experiment once again. You know, yeah, if you find yourself stuck, you know, putting that man with a gun, or if you're writing like a high seas pirate epic, have a man come in with a cutlass.
For example. Absolutely.
Like try something different, you know, like walk away for a couple of days, try reading something different, a different author in your same genre, perhaps for some inspiration, not plagiarism, inspiration.
Right.
Sure. So I wanted to shift gears. We had started to talk about, I feel like I'm kind of like bouncing back and forth like a ping pong ball here, but so I wanted to shift gears a little bit towards marketing. We had touched on an email list earlier. and the importance of, you know, owning that audience and like the leverage that it gives, like you as an author. So what would you say are some of your favorite, let's say, cost-effective ways to promote and market your books?
I think a good source is email newsletters like BookBub, Free Booksy, Fussy Librarian, things like that. Some of them are genre-specific. Like there's Book Barbarian, which is for fantasy and sci-fi. There's Book Adrenaline, which is for like what I write, mystery and thriller. And there's like Red Feather Romance, which is obviously for romance. But most of them will handle pretty much anything. It will handle most genres. Some of them will send links to Amazon. Some of them will go to all the wide stores like Apple, Kobo, etc. There's a few good, like David Cochran, who's an indie author and advocate, has a list of like the good promo sites out there. There's a few lists out there you can find. I'll try to send them to you afterwards so you can put them in your show notes.
Awesome. All right.
But yeah, those I think can be very effective. BookBub is the big one, the big player in the space. They have millions of subscribers, and they're the most expensive because you're paying for their millions of subscribers. But other ones can be really good too. Those can be very effective. Free is more powerful than 99 cents, which is better than 1.99, et cetera. You can also run pay-per-click ads on Amazon, Facebook, and other sites. I think you really need more than one book to make that work because a lot of the value comes in read-through. Like right. If you have a three-book series or a six-book series or whatever, you're going to get people who go from one to two to three, et cetera. Whereas if you just have a single book, your margins are a lot smaller to make that work. But that can work for many authors. Word of mouth helps, obviously, if you have a mailing list, an ARC team, a street team, regular posts. Some people blow up on TikTok and places like that. You can't count on going viral, but you have to be there to make the attempt, right? You got to play to win, as the lottery commercials always tell us. You can try to go on the social media sites and make engaging posts with readers that way too.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned TikTok there, because about 2 weeks ago I had a really impressive young lady named Shanti Hershenton. She's 16 years old and she has like 16 books published. So she's almost catching up to you. And she has done actually quite well on TikTok, because apparently there's a whole community of like avid book readers on there, which I never knew about till having that discussion with her, interestingly enough. I was wondering, you had mentioned Amazon there. Do you ever set your books to free on Amazon?
Yeah, I run promos periodically. I have one coming up actually early March, like the first week of March. I think The Mechanic, my first thriller, is going to be free for about a week on Amazon and the other sites. And I have a few newsletter promos, not a BookBub, but a few of the other promo sites booked for that.
So when you use these newsletter sites that you had mentioned, how do you measure how effective they are, those promotions are?
Some of them will tell you, like they have a dashboard that says you got X number of downloads or clicks or whatever on this day. I try to only book one a day if I can help it, because I want to see, like if your book is free, you can go to Amazon and see how many downloads you got, or Kobo and see how many you got. But if you have three sites booked in one day, how do you know which contributed to that? So I try to space them out, only have one on a particular day, so I can see, okay, this site did a little bit better than this one. Just because one site costs $100, the other one costs $35, doesn't mean the one is three times better than the other. You can look at your download numbers and see where you're really getting your value. How much are you paying per download? If it's $100 and you only got 2,000 downloads, but from your $35 site, you got 1,500 downloads. That's a much better value in terms of like dollars per download. So yeah, I would try to only book one a day so you can really gauge the effectiveness of each one separately.
Yeah, that's a really good point right there too. I'll definitely mention that in the show. I actually had never considered that myself. So also in the snooping that I was doing in preparation for our interview, going back a little bit, we had touched on social media. I do see it looks like you have accounts on Instagram, the platform formerly known as Twitter, which is now X, and TikTok. So I guess I wanted to ask you, with the ever like changing landscape of social media algorithms that are more closely guarded than our Colonel Sanders' recipe of herbs and spices that we don't fully understand. Mm-hmm. Which of your social media accounts would you say that you found in your experience to be most beneficial for your book sales, and how were you able to measure that?
Probably Twitter, well, X, whatever, is probably, I think, the least useful, at least for book. You can maybe connect with other authors or influencers in your space there, but I think in terms of selling books to strangers, it is probably the least useful. I would say probably Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, in that order. And I've been on Facebook the longest, so maybe that's just where I've probably sold the most books there. But you can run Facebook ads, and I do have a Facebook ad running, like a $5 or $10 a day Facebook ad for my first thriller. But I have a Facebook group that I probably don't use as often as I should. I have a Facebook page that I use, again, probably not as often as I should. But yeah, you have to show up on these platforms, right? Pick the ones that you enjoy using. Don't go to TikTok just because everybody else is on TikTok. You can do it without showing your face on camera. You don't have to dance or whatever people might be concerned about. But learn how to use the platform, because like you said, there's different algorithms. Each one is different. They all look for and favor and disfavor certain things. There's articles, there's books you can read on how to use Facebook or how to use Instagram or X or TikTok and all that. And I mean, it all takes time, right? It's being an indie author, so there very much feels like a second job some days, and a few days even feels like a main job. Because I have to write the books, I have to publish the books, I have to market the books, I have to go on social media, I have to do all these things, and all while having a family and a day job.
You're wearing a lot of hats.
I am, yes. We all are, I guess.
Oh, yeah. We had kind of touched on this a little bit a couple of minutes ago, but I wanted to dive a little bit deeper. What has been your experience with like paid advertising, specifically like Amazon ads? You did mention you've used Facebook, Goodreads, and do you have like any preferences for where you prefer to run your pay-per-click ads that you might want to share with any authors who are considering running paid advertising who have never done so before?
Yeah, I think Amazon and Facebook are probably the two to start with. You can run pay-per-click ads on BookBub, not the featured deals, the little ad at the bottom of the email. Those I find are the most difficult. They're the most fickle by far in my experience. And I don't know many people who have made them work. There's clearly some secret sauce out there, but I don't know what it is. There are Amazon and Facebook are different platforms, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm an expert at any of them. But there are resources out there. There are books out there for learning about Facebook ads. Mallory Cooper has a very good book on Facebook ads. What's her name? Deb Potter and Janet Margot have very good books on Amazon ads. Janet Margot used to run Amazon ads for Amazon. So they both have good books there. There are courses you can take, and not everyone needs to take a course, maybe, but there are certainly courses out there on how to do these things. A good book, a good Google search will probably get you started on, the saying is don't spend money you can't afford to lose, because you're probably going to make some mistakes at first and not make your money back right away. And you have to account for that and build that in. So if it's not something you can financially do, don't feel obligated to do it.
Yeah, and I guess it would probably be a disservice to, go deeper into like running ads on those platforms, because they change all the time as well.
They do.
Yeah, so you could go give us right now a detailed breakdown of how to create an ad creative on Facebook, and they could change the entire ad setup like next week, and I know they have. Yeah. They have several
that happened.
Times.
Mark Dawson's ad course is his big Facebook ads course. This is going back several years ago. But he had just put out like, oh, here's our new version. And like the next week, Facebook literally took the power editor, anyone who remembers the power editor.
Oh, yeah,
they took that away and completely changed how you make ads. And his whole course was useless at that point. Not useless, but
it's like
the videos like, gotcha. Showing you how to do things, you couldn't use them anymore because they changed everything. So he had to go back and redo it all. And yeah, that's why it's hard to make that kind of content because, you know, some things we do are evergreen. Some principles don't change, but how you make an ad on Amazon is going to look a lot different today than it did in 2019. And, you know, I wouldn't even try to write those books or make those courses because you have to keep updating them constantly. And
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to do all that.
So again, kind of like that point, that kind of like the running theme for a conversation, you have to constantly be willing to like be learning new things and mm-hmm. be open to experimenting.
Yes.
So, so far we wrap up here today, Tom, where can any listeners who are interested in learning more about your books and your journey, where can they find out more about you?
My website is tomfowlerwrites.com. That's TOMFOWLERWRITES.com. Pretty sure I spelled that right. I hope so. It's my own name. I also have a direct store for ebooks and audio and even print set up at tomfowlerbooks.com. But yeah, I think I'm at Tom Fowler Writes on all the platforms. I'm happy to talk to people.
And all right, that's pretty easy to remember. Tom Fowler Writes. I like how you put "writes" in there, so you don't confuse you with Tom Fowler, the like the piano juggler who also rides a unicycle simultaneously. Yes. You got to have that specificity in there.
Right, exactly.
All right, and this has been another episode of the Pen to Profit podcast. I wanted to thank our guest, Tom Fowler, for spending his time and sharing his wisdom and expertise with us. And until next time, as we say around these parts, the pen is mightier than the sword. Unless you're in a sword fight, then you might want to reconsider your options. Have a great day, folks.
Thanks for tuning in to the Pen to Profit podcast. If you've enjoyed hanging out with us today, swing by iTunes or your podcast app of choice and leave a rating and write a review. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button to get more of this grammar goulash delivered piping hot to your ear holes every week. And if you're looking for more tips, tricks, and free trainings that aren't available anywhere else, click the link in the show notes to join the Author Success Hub Facebook group. It's one part mastermind group and one part creative writing workshop. Except you can attend in your pajamas without judgment. Plus, you'll be mixing it up with fellow authors who are all about that writing and profiting life. Until next time, keep putting pen to paper and turning those pages to profit. Ciao.